Doctor, I'd like to ask you something.
Yes, Inspector.
You say that finally you did sign a death certificate.
Against my professional judgment.
Mm. But nevertheless stating death from natural causes.
In so many words, yes.
Then nearly 18 months have gone by. Do you still think you were wrong to sign it?
I'm afraid I do.
So what you're saying, Doctor?
What I'm saying is that that certificate should have simply read murder.
Unnatural Death. The novel by Dorothy L. Sayers, dramatized for radio by David Geary. With Hugh Burden as Lord Peter Wimsey and Clifford Norgate as Detective Inspector Charles Parker. Unnatural Death.
More coffee, my lord.
Thank you, Bunter. We kept you up rather late last night, Bunter.
Don't mention it, my lord.
Did Inspector Parker get a cab all right?
There was one on the rank, my lord.
Good. Is this my cousin's marmalade you gave me this morning?
Yes, my lord.
Hmm. It's a bit watery.
Really, my lord?
Yes. Funny thing about women, the stronger they are, the weaker their marmalade. I wonder why they're so keen on making the stuff.
I'm told it has a soothing effect on the nervous system, my lord.
Ah, that might explain it, Bunter. Still, I think we'll go back to the Oxford tomorrow, if you've no objection.
Certainly, my lord.
Good. By the way, how's the photography these days?
Very satisfactory, my lord. I've just acquired a new camera, which is giving excellent results.
Really?
Yes, my lord. A Thornton Picard. It should prove most useful in our more specialized work.
Hmm. Well, I'd like to see some prints when you have a moment.
Of course, my lord.
Ah, callers already.
I'll see who it is, my lord.
Perhaps it's the man from the Gaslight and Coke.
Oh, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Butter.
Come in, sir.
Thanks.
Is that Inspector Parker, Butter?
Yes, my lord.
I wondered if I'd find you up.
Of course I'm up, Charles. Have some coffee.
Splendid.
We thought you might be the man to read the meter.
Oh.
Look, you can't have had breakfast. Let Butter get you some.
No, I'm quite all right,
sir. It'd be no trouble, sir.
No, really, Butter. The coffee's just what I want.
Will that be all, then, my lord?
Yes, fine.
Thank you, my lord.
Charles, for someone who only left this flat a few hours ago, you've returned with a remarkable dispatch.
Yes, I suppose I have. And I should really be over at Notting Dale. But I've been thinking over all that business last night.
So have I.
Yes, I'm damn sure you have.
Well?
I think there's a danger in reading too much into it.
You do?
Yes. And I've a feeling that unless I put a few simple points to you in the cold light of dawn, you're going to be off on another of the famous Wimsey investigations.
Anything wrong with that?
Well, only that I always seem to get caught up in them. Look, Peter, what does last night really boil down to?
Well, we dined together in Soho, met a young and somewhat serious member of the medical profession, and brought him back here to join us in a glass of port.
And?
And the gentleman told us a rather interesting story, which you've come round to tell me you don't believe.
No, I believe it. But I don't think it need be interpreted the way he thinks it should.
As a case of murder?
Well, that's what he thinks it is.
And you?
On the facts that he gave us, death from natural causes.
Hmm.
On the facts that he gave us.
What are the facts, as you see them?
Well, these. We meet a young man who tells us he's a doctor. He doesn't disclose his name. He tells us that 3 years ago, in 1924, he took over a practice in an unspecified town in Hampshire.
Yes.
Now, one of his patients is a cancer case. An old lady, then aged 72. She lives alone with her only relative, her niece.
Mm-hmm.
Over a year later, in the autumn of 1925, the niece begins to be concerned that her aunt is getting much worse. The doctor discounts this. Early in November, he's called to the house in the middle of the night to find the patient in great pain. He gives her a morphine injection and examines her very thoroughly the following day, but finds nothing to worry about. 3 days later, the old lady dies.
From natural causes?
Is there any evidence to the contrary?
No.
No. Nevertheless, the doctor finds he is unable, with a clear conscience, to give a death certificate, since, in his opinion, there is no obvious cause of death, and he asks for a post-mortem, which he is able to conduct himself. However, as the deceased had wished for cremation, another doctor is required to sign the certificate jointly. The two physicians work on the autopsy together. It reveals nothing. Our friend finally, though still reluctantly, signs a certificate. Cause of death, cancer. Immediate cause, heart failure.
Mm. And to complete the story, the crematorium gets worried, so the poor old dear has to be buried instead.
Mm.
The coroner starts to poke his nose in, rumours rife, and our young Hippocrates is forced to leave town and is now looking for another opening, as he puts it.
That's about it.
Yes. You know, Charles, as a sapper of morale and general dampener of enthusiasm, you are without peer, if you'll excuse my use of the expression.
Oh, I'm sorry. Those are the facts.
They are the medical facts.
And they are the only ones that count.
Charles, aren't you assuming that because the available medical evidence points to death from natural causes, that therefore foul play is automatically ruled out?
Well, yes, that's the whole point.
Yes. In fact, you're assuming that the medical evidence is both accurate and complete.
Yes. Well, I mean,
suppose it's incomplete.
What? No, two doctors examined that body. One with close knowledge of the deceased, the other entirely independent. They found nothing.
As would 99 doctors out of 100. The 100th might be looking for something the others weren't.
But looking for what?
I don't know. But mightn't it be rather fun to find out? Taxi? Taxi?
No, he's going up Hamilton Terrace.
Ah, so he is.
Look, I can spare 1 hour, not a second more.
An hour will be ample.
You do realize what you're up against. Not only has our doctor not given you his name, he's deliberately not told you the old lady's name, or even where all this is supposed to have happened.
True, Charles.
And what's more, he really only wanted to get the story off his chest. He didn't want anything done about it.
No, but I think he'd be pleasantly surprised if something was. And I think we're the people to do it.
We?
A slip of the tongue.
Glad to hear it.
Hi, taxi.
Where exactly are we off to?
Pimlico.
Pimlico?
Yes, I've a friend there I'd like you to meet.
A friend?
Yes, you like her. I've got her fixed up in a little flat.
Her?
Yes.
Where to, Gov?
197A St. George's Square.
Right, sir.
Can you go, Charles? That's it. Yes, she's very comfortably fixed up. Only a modest little case, of course, but that's all she wanted.
Really?
Yes.
How long?
Only a few months.
I see.
She's quite unique, you know, Charles. A wonderful person.
Splendid. Must be marvellous for you.
It is. I'm sure you'll like her.
Sure I will.
And she'll be most intrigued to hear about our doctor friend.
What's her name, by the way?
Miss Clemson. Alexandra Catherine Clemson.
But how very interesting, Lord Peter. Really extremely interesting. And how very disturbing for the poor young doctor.
Exactly, Miss Clemson. Very disturbing.
And you say that if there hadn't been such a scandal, he would be happily married by now.
Married, certainly. And I trust happily.
Such a pity.
Yes. But of course, Miss Clemson, there's more to the affair than we've told you so far.
Ah. Well, now, before you go on, I must ask you both if I can offer you a cup of coffee.
Charles?
No, not for me, thanks.
Are you sure, Inspector? With a shortbread biscuit?
No, really. It's most kind of you, Miss Clemson.
And I won't either, Miss Clemson, but don't let us stop
you. No, Lord Peter, a little on the early side for me. Now, do go on.
Well, what we've told you up to now are the essentials. But there are one or two rather interesting details to go with them.
I see.
Now, it seems that the old lady we're speaking of was very well off. Mm-hmm. She'd had to undergo an operation during the time she's been looked after by our friend the doctor. And because of the risk involved, he thought it wise to ask her if she had made a will.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she hadn't. She had no intention of making one.
Oh, most unwise.
She said a will wasn't necessary because her niece who lived with her was her only kith and kin.
Famous last words.
Well, I know, but you'll never convince some people.
No.
Now, I gather, by the way, that a solicitor called on the old girl at some stage, managing to get her pretty worked up about something. But whether that had anything to do with the will, no one seems to know.
Now, about the niece, Lord Peter, what sort of girl is she?
Well, about 26, 27 or so, mm-hmm. Good education, self-reliant, keeps her head in emergencies, that sort of type.
She'd been a nurse.
Really?
That's right. She'd been at the Royal Free. Of course, when she gave up her job to look after her aunt, nursing didn't come into it. She was more of a companion.
I see.
After the operation, it was a different matter. An outside nurse was brought in then.
Whom the doctor seems to have thought pretty highly of.
Oh, yes?
Yes, so much so that they got engaged to each other.
Oh, I see. How romantic.
Most.
Now, I wanted to ask you, why did the niece start to get worried about her aunt's condition? Had there been some sort of incident?
Well, that we're not clear about. All we know definitely is what happened early in November 1925.
When the doctor was called out at night.
That's right. He found she wasn't in any immediate danger, though. He gave her some morphia, and that was that. Next day, he overhauled her very carefully, and somewhat surprisingly found she was doing even better than he'd supposed.
Yes, and 3 days later, she was dead.
Oh, terrible.
Indeed. And again, somewhat surprisingly, from the doctor's viewpoint, no wound, no hemorrhage, no sign of a struggle, not a single obvious symptom.
But, Lord Peter, would there be? I mean, the aunt was 73 by then. She had cancer. She had to go sometime.
Oh, I know. Nevertheless...
What?
Well, one or two things don't seem quite right. For instance, I think that business of the old lady not making a will comes into it somehow.
Oh, how?
Well, I just don't know, Charles. And another thing, I believe cancer patients very seldom pop off in that rather unexpected way. Our young medico is aware of that, too. That's why he felt he had to have a post-mortem. But the point that intrigues me most is the niece.
How do you mean?
She told the doctor our aunt's condition was deteriorating. But in fact, it wasn't.
Oh, come, Peter, that's only the doctor's opinion.
A medical opinion, Charles.
Yes, well, all right. But what about the niece's opinion? She was a trained nurse.
Yes, she was, wasn't she? Oh, look, you've got other things to do, Charles. We mustn't keep you. Miss Crimson?
Yes, Lord Peter.
I think that's pretty well all we can tell you about the business at this stage. But as far as I'm concerned, I'd like to know some more.
Yes, of course, Lord Peter. Now, what would you like me to do?
Well, quite a lot. First of all, we know this happened in Hampshire, but we don't know the name of the town.
Mm-hmm.
Nor do we know the name of the deceased.
Mm-hmm.
We need that information before we can do anything.
Yes, of course.
If you'll be so good then, Miss Timpson, would you go down to Somerset House and get them to look up all the death certificates for Hampshire in the month of November 1925?
Yes, I see.
If you have to give any reason for your search, you could suggest you're compiling some statistics about cancer.
Yes.
Now, the certificate we want will state age 73, mm-hmm. cause of death cancer, immediate cause heart failure.
Yes.
And it'll have been signed by two doctors.
Now, suppose there is more than one certificate like that.
Ah, well, that's where the really hard work comes in. And where, if I may say so, we shall benefit from your remarkable qualities of shrewdness and discretion.
Lord Peter.
Yes, I mean it, Mr. Look, we had better be off, Charles.
Yes.
Oh, I'll see you out.
Now, how soon do you think we can get started, Mr.
Oh, straight away, Lord Peter. I can get down to Somerset House at once.
Excellent. Well, when you've finished at Somerset House, perhaps you'd telephone the flat and let me know what you found.
Yes, of course.
And after that, I shall probably ask you to take a little trip to Hampshire.
I understand.
Good.
Now, is this your hat, Inspector?
That's the one, Miss Clemson. Thanks.
It's been such a pleasure meeting you.
Well, I hope we'll meet again, Miss Clemson.
I'm sure you will, Charles. Now, we'd better make a noise like a hoop and roll away. Goodbye, then, Miss Clemson.
Goodbye, Lord Peter. I'll telephone as soon as possible. Goodbye, Inspector.
Goodbye, Miss Clemson.
Well, Charles, that's got things underway.
That is patently clear. My worst fears are confirmed.
Hmm?
There's only one question. Who is Miss Clemson?
Charles, it's not what you think.
Well, even I don't imagine that.
Miss Clemson, Charles, is a manifestation of the wasteful way this country is run.
What?
Thousands of ladies like her, mistresses of the art of gossip, are left unused, while the work for which they are so eminently fitted is inefficiently carried out by ill-equipped policemen such as yourself.
Thank you very much.
I'm quite serious. People want questions asked, who do they send? A man with large feet and a notebook. I send a lady with a long woolly jumper on knitting needles. Of course she asks questions. Everyone expects it. And because of that, Charles, she has a very good chance of getting results. Hello?
Go ahead, caller.
Hmm? Oh, thank you. Lord Peter?
Yes?
Miss Clemson here, Lord Peter. I've just left Somerset House.
Ah, good day, Miss Clemson. What sort of luck?
Well, it all depends. There are four towns in Hampshire with certificates that match the details we're after.
Four?
Yes. Meryton, Woolbridge, Leehampton, and Harmsworth.
Hmm. Well, I think we're lucky it's only four. How do you feel about finding which one it is?
I'd like to very much.
Good. Excellent. What I thought of was that perhaps you might be a retired lady in easy circumstances looking for a nice little place to settle down in.
Yes.
Hampshire would suit you very well, I imagine.
Oh, very pleasant county, yes.
Now, there's no need to rush over this. Let me have your reports just when it suits you.
Right.
I think you may have some rather tiresome spade work in the early stages, but once you hit the right town, I'm pretty sure you'll know fairly quickly. It's not that long ago since this particular death, and it won't have been forgotten yet by a long chalk.
Clemson?
Just back, Mrs. Budge.
Lunch won't be long.
Oh, no hurry, please.
I've had such a busy morning. I'd be glad of a little sit down.
Oh, I know how you feel. Been shopping, have you?
Oh, yeah, just one or two things. There's always something else one seems to need.
When you're away from home.
Yes.
Oh, I know. It's hankies with me.
Oh.
Pack everything but hankies. I've piles of them upstairs because of it. Oh, was I new? Oh, dear, how awful. No, no, most of this is knitting wool. I needed some more for my nephew's cricketing sweater.
Oh, yes. Oh, those sweaters take a lot, I know. I'm on a tea cozy at the moment. Only 3 ounces, so I got off lightly.
Yes, indeed. Well, what do you think of Leehampton, then, Miss Clemson? Oh,
very pleasant, very pleasant. The winter gardens seem particularly charming. I thought I might take a proper walk around there this afternoon.
Oh, yes, you should. Of course, we're quite famed for our winter gardens, you know. Especially for our tropical plants.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Come from far and wide to Leehampton, you know. Botanists and people.
Really?
Oh, yes. And then there's the water, of course.
Water?
Oh, yes. Water's very famous. Leehampton water. Very good for rheumatism, they say.
Really?
Yes. And the air's so good. You were staying at Meryton before, did you say?
Yes, just for a few days, yes. Then I had a little while in Woolbridge.
Meryton's very nice. That's where my sister lives. But I never think it's a patch on Leehampton. The air's nothing like as nice. Lovely air here, don't you think?
Lovely, yes. Tell me, do you think I'll be able to find a good doctor here, Mrs. Budge? That would be most important.
Oh, no trouble finding a doctor in Leehampton.
No?
Oh, no, bless me, no trouble at all. Now, I'm with Dr. Harper myself. He's such a nice man. I know you like him. He's just round the corner in Coffey's Lodge.
Oh, yes.
Now, there's Dr. Frost. Mm-hmm. He's spoken very highly of. Very expensive, but very highly qualified. And then there's Dr. Benson. He's more for the children, though.
Oh.
And Dr. Mitchell over in the Crescent. Oh, they're all spoken very well of. You'd be in safe hands with any of them.
That sounds most encouraging. The only thing about doctors, Mrs. Budge, is that I never feel quite happy about some of the younger ones.
Oh, I know.
I do feel an elderly doctor is so much more dependable.
Oh, I know exactly what you
know,
mean.
I know exactly,
Miss Clemson. Dear me, yes. Oh, and you know, it's funny you should say that about young doctors. We had some very strange goings-on in that line only a little while back.
In Leehampton?
Yes. In Wellington Avenue. Poor old Miss Dawson.
How do you mean, Mrs. Budge?
Oh, what dreadful business it was. Now, the doctor there was only just out of his cradle. Caused no end of trouble. Dr. Carr.
You wouldn't recommend him, then?
I should certainly think not, Miss Clemson. Nor would anyone else, I can tell you.
But you're quite safe anyway, because he left a few months ago. Went back to London.
Ah, yeah. Oh, a dreadful business. Old Miss Dawson died of cancer. And that Dr. Carr had the cheek to say she'd been done in.
You mean she...
Done in, Miss Clemson.
Good heavens, did he actually say that?
Oh, no, not him. He never actually said anything. Just hinted. A very sneaky sort altogether.
Oh, how dreadful.
It was dreadful. I don't know how poor Miss Whittaker stood it all.
Miss Whittaker?
Oh, Miss Dawson's niece.
Oh, yes.
Such a nice young lady. Thought the world of her aunt. How she put up with it all, I just don't know. Especially that nurse, little baggage.
Oh, there was a nurse there, too?
Oh, well, there had to be, you see, because the old lady needed a lot of looking after.
Oh, of course.
But the way it went... That Dr. Carr got more looking after from the nurse than all Miss Dawson ever got.
Mrs. Budge!
No, it is the truth. Ask anyone.
Oh, how dreadful.
Indeed it was. Fluttering her eyelashes at Dr. Carr when she should have been looking after the old lady. No wonder Miss Whittaker had to give her the sack. Fillimore. That was her name. Nurse Fillimore. Came from one of the big London hospitals, too.
Really?
And they took her back there, so I'm told. You wouldn't credit it, would you?
I'm afraid I'm still a little puzzled, Lord Peter. How did you get to know about all this in the first place?
Good question, Miss Fillmore. In fact, from your fiancé.
From Dr. Carr?
Exactly.
But as far as
he's concerned, the case is closed?
Yes.
Yes. But you know, it's my personal belief it shouldn't be.
I see. Do sit down.
Thank you. Might I hazard a guess that you share that belief?
I think the whole thing was desperately unfair, yes, but... I'm not sure it'll do any good to bring it up again after all this time.
I think it may, you know, if only to restore a little confidence all round. My impression is that neither you nor the good doctor are exactly fools where medical matters are concerned. but that you can't help thinking you were in the Leehampton affair.
That puts it quite well.
Look, I really don't want to bother you much. It's most kind of you to see me at all. But there are one or two things I'm particularly interested in. Now, there was a visit from a solicitor at some stage. I believe it agitated your patient somewhat. Was that in your time?
No, it was before Miss Dawson had her operation. But I did hear he wasn't a Leehampton solicitor. No one knew where he came from or what he wanted. The maids that were there met him, but they were dismissed when I was.
Really? Oh, that's a pity. Always a sort of sinister charm about mysterious solicitors. Miss Fillmore, if you'll excuse me touching on this point, a lot of people in Leehampton seem to think your relations with Dr. Carr exceeded the bounds of propriety.
Oh, you know all about that, then?
I'm afraid so.
It really was damnable. I had the most dreadful interview with Matron when I got back here.
How much truth was there in what people were saying about you?
None. Absolutely none. They were nothing but vicious stories, and she must have started them.
She?
Miss Whittaker.
Oh, yes. Of course, you became engaged to Dr. Carr, didn't you?
Well, yes, I did. But you're not saying that's a crime.
My dear girl, I'm not saying anything. Might Miss Whittaker have thought it a crime, though?
What?
Dr. Carr's very prepossessing sort of chap. Perhaps you beat her to the post, so to speak.
I see. I see what you mean.
Miss Fillmore, may I ask you this?
Yes.
How do you think Miss Dawson died?
I think she was murdered. But I just don't know how.
Hmm. Who do you think did it?
Miss Whittaker.
I see. Well, look, I'm really most grateful to you. You can hardly be pleasant dragging all this up again.
That's quite all right.
In fact, you've been extremely helpful. Anyway, I'll make a noise like a bee and buzz off. just one thing.
Yes?
The maids.
The maids.
Yes. Why were they dismissed?
Oh, well, they were sisters. A lot of crockery was smashed, apparently.
Hmm?
Miss Whittaker gave one of the girls notice, so the other left with her. They had a funny sort of name. Go-to-bed. That was it.
Really? Go-to-bed?
Yes. Bertha and Evelyn. They were very sweet girls.
And was a lot of crockery smashed?
I wouldn't have said so, but then I wasn't in the kitchen that much.
Any idea where the girls went to afterwards?
I'm afraid not. But I dare say you could find out.
Yes, thank you. I dare say I will.
You know, Peter, I still can't seriously believe there was anything odd about that woman's death. After all you've got to go on are people's opinions and a lot of silly gossip.
Charles, I know there was something odd about it. And the deeper we dig, the odder it gets.
You and Miss Clemson, you mean?
Mainly Miss Clemson. She's been extremely active. I wish I could say the same. The trouble is, I've been playing the waiting game for quite a while, and it doesn't exactly suit me.
What do you mean?
Well, after I saw Nurse Fillmore, I thought the best idea would be to have a word with those maids. So I put an advertisement for them in all the agony columns. Here. Oh,
thanks. Bertha and Evelyn go to bed, formerly in the service of Miss Agatha Dawson of the Grove, Wellington Avenue, Leehampton, are requested to communicate with J. Merbles, solicitor of Staple Inn, London, WC1, when they will hear of something to their advantage. Hmm. Will they?
Oh, yes. The main thing is, I will.
Who's Merbles?
Everyone's picture of the typical family solicitor. He happens to be our family solicitor.
I see.
I think it may be revealing to know something of the Dawson household from below stairs, so to speak.
Yes.
The mid-morning editions, my lord.
Oh, thanks, Butter. Let's have them.
Yes, certainly, my lord.
Charles?
I'll have a star. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Will there be anything else, my lord?
No, thanks.
Thank you, my lord.
Oh. What's London offering us today?
Mm.
Murder, mystery, or mayhem?
Oh, mystery, by the sound of it.
Hmm?
Has yours got this Epping Forest business?
What?
A girl's body found in forest. No sign of foul play, say police.
Yes, got it. The unidentified body of a young woman, fully clothed, was found early this morning in a secluded part of Epping Forest. Mm. Death, which appears to be from natural causes, took place about 2 to 3 days ago. Yes.
Anything more?
No, nothing that isn't padding. Ah. Hello? Oh, hello, Merbles. Oh, have you? Excellent. Bertha? Yes? The letter's from her, is it? Oh, my landlady, I see. Disappeared? When? Tuesday. I see. 4 o'clock this afternoon. Yes, all right, Merbles, don't worry. I'll be there just before. Good. Thanks so much. Bye.
The advertisement?
Yes. A letter from Bertha Godovitz's landlady. The girl hasn't been back to her lodging since she left there on Tuesday morning. Mm. The landlady then spotted the advertisement and got onto Merbles, as she is pretty worried. In fact, she thinks he's responsible. She's calling on him this afternoon.
How long has the advertisement been in?
A bit over a week. Went in on April the 20th.
Mm. May I use the phone?
Of course. Charles, could it be...
Would you give me Whitehall 1212? Yes, please. I think we ought to know, don't you?
Yes.
Would you put me through to Inspector Barnard, please? Yes. Jim, Charles Parker here. Yes, I know. Look, this Epping Forest business, body of a girl, is all I know is what they're carrying in the early editions. Anything through from Essex on identity yet? No, the papers don't give a name. Oh, would you? Yes, of course. He's just checking.
Yes.
Yes, Jim? I see. Yes. And the girl's name? Right, Jim, many thanks. Much obliged. Bye.
Well?
A waitress from the Coventry Street corner house.
Yes?
The body was found under some bushes. No sign of assault. Sandwich and bottle of beer nearby. Handbag intact. Among the contents, a £5 note and a letter.
Yes?
Addressed to Bertha Gotobed. I'm sorry you missed me just now. You just got back. Oh, have you? Well, that's very quick work. South Audley Street, yes. Mrs. Forrest was the lady's name. I see. You made a delivery to her on the 26th. Fine. Well, thank you very much. That's most helpful. Goodbye. Come in.
Lord Peter Wimms is here, sir.
Oh, thanks, Harvey.
All right, if I come in?
Yes, come in. Take a pew.
Thanks.
Well, how did you get on?
As well as could be expected. The landlady is no longer suspicious of Merbles. She's merely suspicious of me.
And how about Merbles?
He's suspicious of me, too.
Serve you right.
Yes. To be honest, Charles, I feel nothing better than a murderer. A poor, sweet and simple child. Dead.
Now, look,
I'm sorry, but seeing that girl lying there under those bushes, it seems so ordinary. Just a pleasant little picnic on a sunny day in spring. And it hadn't been a picnic.
Peter, I know exactly what you're feeling at the moment. I know it isn't pleasant. But may I remind you, first of all, that the girl's death is most likely completely unconnected with this other business.
No, it's connected, all right.
I'm sorry, but at the moment there is no definite connection. Secondly, as far as we know, the girl died from natural causes.
That's what we're meant to believe.
All right. We all know the views of Dr. Carr and Dr. Whimsy. But theory is one thing, facts another. And the post-mortem will decide the facts. Anyway, one result seems to be that I've been landed with all this officially. I gather you've been bending the ear of your good friend, the Chief Commissioner.
I have. Of course, he thinks the whole thing's complete coincidence.
I don't blame him. Well, why not? Let's see what we've got.
All right. Yes.
Good. Now, tell me, did you get any sense out of the landlady?
Indeed, I did. She turned out to be a very sensible person, Mrs. Gulliver. The two go-to-bed girls came to her straight after leaving Leehampton.
Oh, yes?
They both got taken on at the corner house together, as waitresses. And Bertha was working there right up to the time she disappeared. Hmm. Evelyn, though, met a Canadian chap who used to take his breakfast there and married him. They're both settled in Canada now.
And you had to break the news that Bertha is dead, of course.
Yes, indeed. Mrs. G took it pretty badly. She seems to be very fond of the girl. I told her you might be in touch about formal identification of the body.
Good, yes. And we'll have to get a cable off to Canada to the sister.
I got the sister's address from Mrs. Gulliver. Cropper is her married name.
Evelyn Cropper.
That's right.
Good.
Well, any luck at your end?
Well, some. We've managed to trace the fiver.
Have you indeed? How about the beer bottle? Any fingerprints?
I don't know. The laboratory lads have still got it.
Mm.
Now, about the £5 note. It was one of a series issued to a bank in South Audley Street. On the 19th, they paid it out with two other fives and 10 ones against a cash check drawn by a Mrs. Forrest.
Ah.
Now, they gave me her address. It's further up South Audley Street. She has a flat in a small block above a flower shop.
You've been over there, have you?
Yes, thought it worth having a quick check.
Did you see the lady?
No, she was out.
Well, is there a porter there?
Yes, but he wasn't around either. He's got a small flat at the back where he probably nipped out to do some shopping. But the flower shop seems to know about most of the tenants. Not much about Mrs. Forrest, though, because she's not often there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she turns up occasionally and stays for just a night or two. They sometimes know she's in residence because they see Fortnum's van delivering provisions.
So she does herself well, then.
Yes. Now, I rang Fortnum's earlier, and they rang back just before you came in. They made a delivery to Mrs. Forrest's flat on the 26th, the same day Bertha disappeared.
I see. Do we know what this Mrs. Forrest looks like?
Yes. According to the flower shop girl, she has a most striking appearance. Tall, overdressed, hair peroxided, black eyebrows, powder very white, lips very red. Not hard to miss, one might say.
Oh. And how does this striking lady get about? Does she run a motor?
Yes, a Renault four-seater. It's garage at the back. The man there says it was out on the night of the 26th.
The night Bertha didn't come back?
Yes. It went out at 11:30, returned about 8 o'clock the next morning.
Really?
You know, on the face of it, this looks as if Mrs. Forrest could be called a provider of facilities.
It looks a bit like it.
I think we may find a gentleman somewhere who could confirm the theory. Mrs. Forrest brings the parties together and leads them to it. Something untoward happens and the body gets dumped at Epping. Parker? Oh, yes, put them through. Yes, hello? Yes? Oh, really? Just now, was that? Right. Well, that's most kind of you to bother. Thank you very much, miss. Goodbye. That was the flower shop. I asked them to the ring if they spotted Mrs. Forrest. She's just gone up to the flat.
Has she, by Jove?
Yes. Now, suppose you were accompanying me on an inquiry at any time. Could I rely on you to behave yourself, Peter?
Ignoring your hurtful implication, of course you could.
I wonder. And if you were accompanying me, could you provide yourself with a straightforward common or garden surname as opposed to a title?
No problem at all. Miss Crimson suggested an alias might come in handy one day. We agreed on the name of her grocer, a chap called Templeton.
Right. Well, in that case, Mr. Templeton, would you care to share a taxi to South Audley Street?
Here we are. As you say, Charles, it looks as if the tenants do themselves quite well here.
Yes, looks like it. Not that I go for all these springy carpets myself.
No, it is a bit like being in a picture palace.
Yes?
Ah, Mrs. Forrest?
Yes?
Yes, I'm a police officer, Mrs. Forrest. My card.
Oh, Detective Inspector Parker.
Yes, that's right. And this is Mr. Templeton. Would you mind if we had a few words with you?
What about?
Well, might we discuss that inside?
Well, yes, I suppose so. Come in, will you?
Thanks. Mr. Templeton?
Right.
This way. Through here.
Thank you.
Please sit down.
Thanks.
The cigarettes are there. Well, what's this all about?
We're engaged in certain inquiries, Mrs. Forrest, and feel you may be able to help us.
Oh?
Yes. It's a question of a banknote that's been traced to your possession. A £5 note issued to you by your bank on April the 19th.
Oh, I see. You're not telling me it was forged or something?
Well, that I'm not prepared to say, Mrs. Forrest. But you do admit receiving a note of that denomination on that date?
Well, yes. Yes, I suppose so. I do remember drawing a cheque around that time for £25, I think.
I see.
So there wouldn't be just one five. There must have been three. I generally draw 10 ones, and if there's more, the rest in fives. There'd have been 3 fives.
Well, can you tell us to whom you paid them?
Well, that's a bit difficult. There was a bill from the garage. I paid them cash. I think there was a £5 note in that.
Yes?
Yes, yes, I'm sure there was. Then I dined out the next day with a woman friend. That definitely took the second one. Now, where did the third one go? Oh, I know. Newmarket.
Newmarket?
On the Saturday. I put it on a horse. It wasn't even in the first 6.
I see. Well, can you tell me which restaurant it was that you dined at, Mrs. Forrest, and the name of your garage?
Well,
Look here, Inspector. All this business about fivers is getting us absolutely nowhere. I don't care a continental curse about the beastly fiver. A reputation is at stake, and that is the only thing that matters.
Now, please, Mr. Templeton.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Now, tell me, Mrs. Forrest, who was it?
Who was it?
Who was here with you on the 26th?
The 26th?
You don't deny you were here on the 26th?
Well, I was, as a matter of fact, but
I... I knew it! You dined together that night, didn't you? Here?
No.
Now, don't deny it. Don't deny it. I insist upon knowing who it was, Mrs. Forrest.
There was no one. No one.
Mr. Templeton.
And they left at 11:30. I know. I insist on a name from you, Mrs. Forrest.
I can't.
I insist, Mrs. Forrest.
It was a friend.
Aha. A friend, eh?
Oh, please, please, Mr. Templeton, please don't ask for his name.
So it was a man.
Yes. Yes.
Then I must know, Mrs. Forrest. I insist on knowing. Was it this man?
What?
This photograph. Take it.
Oh, yes.
Look at it. Look at it carefully. Was that the man who was with you on the 26th?
No. No, no, it was not.
Thank God for that.
There you are, Mr. Templeton. What did I tell you?
I know, Inspector, I simply had to be reassured. My dear Mrs. Forrest, a thousand apologies, but I can now go straight back to my cousin and put her mind completely at rest.
I'm sorry, Mr. Templeton. I really don't understand. What has your cousin to do with all this? And who is the man in this photograph?
May I?
Oh, yes, there.
Thanks. This, Mrs. Forrest, is my dear cousin Sylvia's husband, Lyndhurst. Now, none of this is perfect. I freely acknowledge that. But as a husband, Lyndhurst has a tendency to be a little less perfect than most. A friend of the family, who happens to live in this part of the town, was returning home on the night of the 26th and saw someone closely resembling Lyndhurst leaving these flats at around 11:30. He casually mentioned this to Sylvia when they next met. And as you can imagine, the poor girl was caused the very greatest distress.
But why, Mr. Templeton? Is there any reason why Mr. Lyndhurst...
Major Lyndhurst.
Oh, yes. Well, why shouldn't Major Lyndhurst have been in this area that night?
Because that night, Mrs. Forrest, that night he said he was at the regimental dinner.
Oh. I see.
You see? But now we know the whole thing was just a mistake. I can get on to Sylvia and put her mind completely at rest. Mrs. Forrest, I can't say how sorry I am to have involved you in our family affairs in this way.
Oh, that's quite all right, Mr. Templeton. Don't worry about it.
You will forgive my abruptness, won't you?
Of course.
I'm rather nervously constituted, I'm afraid, and the whole thing's been a bit upsetting.
Oh, I quite understand. But, out of interest, how does the £5 note come into all this?
Perhaps you'd care to explain, Mr. Templeton?
Ah. Mrs. Forrest. I can rely on your confidence.
Oh, completely.
The £5 note was found in a pocket of Lyndhurst's regimentals, together with a lady's handkerchief.
Oh. Oh, how very embarrassing.
It was. And I'm sorry to say the matter is still shrouded in mystery.
Yes, well, I think we'd best be off then, Mr. Templeton.
Yes. Yes, of course.
I'll see you out.
I'm sorry to take up your time too, Inspector, but I really was most concerned.
That's all right, sir. Well, goodbye then, Mrs. Forrest. Sorry to have troubled you.
Not at all. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mrs. Forrest. Most kind. Do we need to call the lift inspector?
No, sir. It seems to be here still.
Oh, good.
After you, sir.
Thanks.
Now, may I ask what the devil you think you are up to?
A good question, Charles. Ground floor?
Yes, and you'd better have a damn good answer.
I'll think one up when we get back to the flat.
Going down?
No, I'm sorry, Peter. It's just not good enough. I take you with me on an inquiry completely against everything in the book, and you mess things up with some damn fool pantomime about a Major Lyndhurst.
I really am sorry, Charles.
And so you should be. We're still in the dark over where the car went. We don't know enough about the fiver, and we haven't the slightest idea if the woman has any connection with Bertha Gotobit.
Well, you know, I have a pretty strong feeling she has.
I don't want feelings, Peter. I want facts.
But we may have some facts.
May have.
Look, won't you have a drink? I'll just ring for Bunter.
What do you mean, we may have facts?
Well, for a start, dear Mrs. Forrest, reactions. Wouldn't you say she was somewhat worried?
Well, yes, extremely worried. But who wouldn't be with you going up in the air like that?
But that woman was guilty. You could tell.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Look, she probably got a divorce coming through and didn't want to tell us about her gentleman caller. Well, look how relieved she was when she saw you were on a different tack.
Yes, she was relieved. Very much so. It's what she was relieved about that's so interesting. Bunter?
You rang, my lord?
Yes, let's have something to drink. Charles, what would you like?
Scotch, I think, please.
Good, and I'll have a thing, Jim.
Very good, my lord.
I'm sorry, Peter, I cannot see what you're driving at.
Simply that Mrs. Forrest seemed more relieved to find us thinking she had a man in that night, any man, rather than a woman.
Well?
Therefore, my dear fellow, she did have a woman. More than likely, Bertha Gotobed.
I see what you mean.
All right, I know you wouldn't class it as fact. Would I be able to let you have something absolutely factual fairly soon?
What?
Another photograph of Major Lyndhurst.
Oh, Major Lyndhurst. Look, now, who is this Major Lyndhurst?
Ah, you may well ask. Major Lyndhurst is really our secret weapon. Let me carefully remove him from my wallet. There. Don't touch him, whatever you do.
What? Look, who is this chap, Peter?
This photograph, it grieves me to say, is a snapshot of my brother Gerald, the 16th Duke of Denver, sent to me in this morning's post by my mother. Her reason for sending it is a complete mystery. Nevertheless, it has already proved itself to be of the greatest practical value.
I don't follow.
Of course you do, Charles. I've looked at it. You've looked at it. Mrs. Forrest has looked at it.
Yes.
And Mrs. Forrest has handled it.
You old devil.
Ah, that's splendid butter. Just here, will you?
Very good, my lord.
Will you take soda, sir?
Yes, please, Bunter.
By the way, how's the new camera, Bunter?
Very satisfactory, my lord. It has produced some remarkable studies of my sister's goldfish, and I'm printing them now.
Splendid. Well, when you got the goldfish out of the way, I'd be most grateful if you could turn your attention to this.
Ah, a snapshot of his grace.
Precisely, and not to be confused with the goldfish. Now, its real appeal lies not so much in its subject, but in the fingerprints on its surface.
I understand, my lord.
Do your usual excellent job with the powders, etc., etc. Photograph the result, do an enlargement, and let me have a copy for Mr. Parker as soon as you can.
Certainly, my lord. I'll start work on it straight away.
That's very good of you, Bunter.
Not at all, my lord.
Well, well, well.
All I'm saying, Charles, is that it could come in handy.
Oh, I agree, especially if there are any prints on that beer bottle.
That's what I was thinking.
All right, Peter, where do we stand? Mrs. Forrest may have had something to do with the Gotobed girl. Again, she may not. The only link at the moment is still that fiver, which is a pretty weak link.
Yes.
But apart from that, we've got to get the post-mortem results. And after that, the inquest. And if all this has anything to do with the Leehampton business, I'll be very much surprised. Oh, by the way, how about our friend Miss Clemson? How near has she got to the Whittaker girl?
I was going to tell you this morning. She's met her.
Has she indeed? What does she make of her?
Very pleasant, very efficient. Everyone down there seems to like her. Mm. Apparently, she's exploring the idea of chicken farming. She's got a friend with the same idea, a girl called Vera Featherston. The two of them are away at the moment. They've taken a cottage for a fortnight near Orpington. There's a likely farm there, I gather.
Mm.
Incidentally, Charles, you know we've always thought of old Miss Dawson being Miss Whittaker's aunt.
Yeah?
Well, it seems Miss Dawson used to live in Warwickshire with her cousin. She was Clara Whittaker.
Yeah?
They've been friends for years. Now, as a result of this friendship, Miss Dawson's sister married Clara's brother.
Yeah.
And the two old girls shared a nephew, Charles.
Charles.
And Charles's daughter, Mary, is our Miss Whittaker.
Oh, I see.
So although she always called Miss Dawson aunt, in fact, she was really a great aunt.
Hmm. Not such a close relation as we thought.
No.
Well, lucky for her, there wasn't anyone closer.
Exactly. And another... Good heavens, Charles. I think you've hit it.
What?
I bet you anything, that's it. Look, this is 1927, all right?
Yeah.
And old Miss Dawson died when?
1925, November 1925.
November 1925, and without making a will. Charles, we must get on to Merbles.
Merbles?
My solicitor. Now, what's his number?
It's nearly seven. He'll have left his office ages ago.
I'll bring him home. I'll see if we can get him around here. Bunter can do us all a stake. Charles, I think we're on to something at last. I may be wrong, but I don't think so. It's something I read in a paper about a new act.
An act?
Act of Parliament. Oh. A new property act, Charles, which I'm pretty sure came into force on the first day of 1926. Now, look, I knew this would happen, Merbles. I saw the danger signal as soon as you said the new act makes everything simpler.
That was certainly the act's intention.
Yes, well, our laws are littered with good intentions. Mm-hmm. Every act that makes things simpler needs another to disentangle it. Some more port, Charles?
Thanks.
There we are. Do you?
I'm fine.
Merbles, drop more for you.
No, thank you. I'm doing very well.
Well, help yourself if you want to. Don't forget the cigars.
Thank you.
Surely, from what you've been saying, Mr. Merbles, any difficulty in interpreting the new property act lies in defining the word issue. If any brother or sister dies before the intestate, then to his or her issue.
Oh, that's perfectly correct, Inspector. And my opinion, which I must stress is only a tentative opinion, would be, I think, that issue, in this case, means issue ad infinitum, and that, therefore, great-nephews and great-nieces would be entitled to inherit.
Yes, and Mary Whittaker is Miss Dawson's great-niece.
Yes, all right. But, Merbles, you say your opinion.
Might there be another opinion?
I'm afraid there might. The question is very complicated.
What did I tell you?
Yes, but frankly, I see no cause for concern in this particular instance. After all, Mary Whittaker was apparently the nearest surviving relative. Miss Dawson died in 1925. The old Property Act was still in force. So the money would pass without any question to Mary Whittaker. I see no ambiguity there.
No, none whatever. In 1925, and always assuming there was no other surviving relative.
Good Lord. I see what you're driving at. When did the new act come into force, sir?
The 1st of January, 1926.
And Miss Dawson died in November, 1925.
You see? But supposing she'd lived, as the doctor fully expected her to do, till well into 1926, would Mary Whittaker have definitely inherited them?
I think that question is very relevant, Lord Peter. You've raised a very serious and important point. If I understand you rightly, you're suggesting that any ambiguity in the interpretation of the new act might provide an interested party with a very good and sufficient motive for hastening the death of Miss Dawson.
I mean exactly that. And if the interested party was Mary Whittaker, there are some further questions that need to be answered.
Such as?
Well, was there anyone who might have had a stronger claim under the new act than Mary Whittaker? And if so, did she know who that person was?
Parker?
Charles, it's Peter.
Oh, hello. Did you get my message about the go-to-bed post-mortem?
Yes, Bunter told me. A heart condition, would you believe it?
Well, that's what they found. Apparently the girl had just eaten a heavy meal and that brought it on.
It doesn't quite tie up with beer and sandwiches in Epping Forest. And there were no fingerprints on the beer bottle?
No, only glove mark.
I see. Well, the inquest will be pretty straightforward.
I think it will. Oh, that was an excellent enlargement Bunter did of the fingerprints on that snapshot. Pity we couldn't tie it up with anything.
Oh, well. Look, what I really rang about was a letter I've had from Miss Clemson. May I read you of it?
Yes, do.
Well, after our chat with Mervis last week, I wrote to Miss C, asking her to pursue the idea of another claimant to the Dawson estate.
Yes?
Well, I've had a reply this morning. I'll read you the bits important. She says, I've just heard something which may be of use. Mrs. Budge remembers talking to a lady who acted as housekeeper to Miss Dawson before the time of the go-to-bed girls.
I see.
This lady mentioned, amongst other gossip, a rather unusual visitor who had called on Miss Dawson one day.
Yeah.
He was a black gentleman, she believed from the West Indies, who was, moreover, a clergyman. What intrigued the housekeeper especially was his visiting card, which was inscribed, The Reverend H. Dawson.
Good heavens.
Exactly.
A relation?
Well, that we don't know. Anyway, I got onto my old chum, Bishop Lambert, and we're trying to track the Reverend down.
Well, I wish you luck with him. By the way, how about your favourite suspect, Miss Whittaker? She's still looking at chicken farms.
She's due back tomorrow, together with her friend Vera. I'll be interested to know how their expedition went.
How do you mean?
I'm wondering if Miss Whittaker's search for a chicken farm took her as far as Epping Forest.
Toasted tea cake.
Oh, splendid.
And your gâteau here.
All right.
Yes, yes, thank you.
Thank you, madam.
Oh, this looks lovely, Miss Clemson.
Yes, well, do tuck in, Vera. We mustn't let the tea cakes get cold.
Right.
Of course, after the last fortnight, I don't suppose you wanted to come back to Leehampton, Vera.
Well, it was quite a wrench leaving the little cottage, I must say.
Yes, I'm sure.
I mean, we got right away from everything there. Just the two of us. Nobody fussing around. It was really wonderful.
I suppose you had somebody in to do the housework, though, didn't you?
Oh, no.
Didn't you?
No, not a soul. We did every bit of it ourselves. Scrubbing floors, laying fires, everything. And Mary's a simply wonderful cook. I hadn't realized.
Is she really? But, well, you must have had a lot of business details to go into, didn't you? I mean, in connection with the chicken farm.
Yes, quite a lot. And, of course, we got around the country a lot that way. We were checking on the markets.
Oh, yes, yes, I was forgetting. You had the little Austin. Do you drive, Vera?
Oh, no. No, Mary does all the driving, though she's going to teach me.
Oh, that'll be nice. Did you run up to town at all while you were there?
No.
Oh. Mary, perhaps?
No.
Oh. I just thought you'd have taken the chance of a little jaunt, ain't it? Not very far from Orpington, is it?
Well,
I don't think Mary's very keen on London, really.
No. Oh, well. So, the two of you stayed in Kent together all the time?
Yes, every minute.
And you didn't get bored with each other?
Oh, no.
Well, you both sound very fortunate young people. But you know, a little change of companionship is good for everybody. I've known so many happy friendships spoiled by people seeing too much of each other.
Well, I don't think they have been real friendships. I mean, Mary and I tell each other all our thoughts and feelings. We trust each other completely. We're really completely happy, Miss Clemson.
That's fortunate, Vera. And if I were Mary Whittaker, I'd feel very touched to think that I had such a friend as you. A true friend, a loyal friend.
Oh, Miss Clemson, how nice you are.
No, I mean it. You may think you're lucky in knowing Mary, but she's the lucky one in knowing you.
Do you think so? I'm such a silly person, really. But I do try to be a loyal friend. It is important, isn't it?
Being loyal, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is. As long as you're sure in your heart that the other person deserves your loyalty.
Yes.
Vera, may I say something? If you ever find yourself wanting to have a chat about anything, do let me know. It is useful at times to have an older person to talk to if you've got anything on your mind.
Oh, Miss Clemson, that is kind of you.
It was just an idea. Hey, but when I was your age, there never seemed anyone I could go to for advice. All my aunts and uncles, they were very nice, but I could never talk to them.
Oh, I know what you mean.
So, if you ever have anything worrying you, Vera, and you want to get it off your chest, just let me know and we can try and sort it out together.
That's very sweet of you, Miss Clemson. I'll remember that.
Well, I'd say you've done a good job there, Sergeant Harvey. Puts things very clearly.
Thank you, sir. I'll get a copy sent off to Essex.
Half past. Lord Peter's late. He's not waiting outside, is he?
I'll see, sir.
He said he'd be here just after 11.
No Sergeant, sir. Good morning, Sergeant. Oh, here he is, sir. Just come in.
Oh, good.
Morning, sir.
Good morning. Charles, I'm frightfully sorry. Mrs. Myrtle let me down.
Your monster motor car.
Yes, the old bus got an airlock and a petrol feed. Took me a bit of time to trace it.
Yes. Well, I gather you some progress to report.
In certain directions. The main thing is we managed to track down the Reverend H. Dawson.
Ah, have you met him?
Yes, had quite a chat. We found he belonged to the Tabernacle Mission. They've got a place down in Stepney. Guess what the H stands for?
No idea.
Hallelujah.
No.
Yes. The Reverend Hallelujah Dawson.
From the West Indies?
From Trinidad. Back in 1810, apparently, one of the Dawsons, a chap called Simon, got press-ganged into the Navy. And while he was out in the West Indies, he managed to jump ship. He married one of the local lasses, and dear old Hallelujah down at Stepney is his surviving grandson.
I see. Well, how does the Reverend rate as a possible claimant?
Ah, good question. I have to admit, I find it quite impossible to work out his exact relationship to the late Miss Dawson. But on the face of it, it looks as if Mary Whittaker wins the inheritance race fairly comfortably, at least under the old Property Act.
I see.
You see, what happened was that the sugar crop failed back home, and Hallelujah and his flock fell on some pretty hard times. Well, then the old boy came across a bundle of family papers, thought his connections over here might be able to help, scraped up enough for the passage, got here, and then looked up the family solicitor in Warwickshire.
He sounds determined.
I suppose so. But it wasn't greed. It was simple poverty. Well, when he showed the solicitor all his papers, the solicitor had to point out that the old boy's relationship to Miss Dawson was extremely distant. But he gave him a letter of introduction, and Hallelujah went down to Leehampton to call on her.
Yes.
Well, apparently Miss Dawson was absolutely charming. And although he made it completely clear he hadn't the slightest claim on her, she upped and made him a yearly allowance, which continued till her death.
Ah, and what happened after her death?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Miss Dawson had told him she didn't like the idea of making a will, but that her niece would continue the allowance on her behalf.
And she didn't continue it?
No.
Can we confirm this chap's story?
Indeed we can, and have.
Oh, how?
Because I got him to give me the name of the solicitor he went to see. Chap named Probin. I then went round to Merbles and got him to phone Probin up. Probin confirms the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
More than that, Probin turns out to be a sort of missing link all in his own.
How do you mean?
Do you remember that business of a mysterious solicitor calling on Miss Dawson?
Oh, yes.
Well, it was Probin.
I see, yes, but...
After his visit, Miss Dawson took all her affairs out of his hands and transferred her custom to a Leehampton firm.
Oh, I see. That's what puzzled me.
Yes, that's why no one seemed to know about him.
But what did he go and see her about?
He went to see her for the simple reason that he was an extremely capable solicitor. Oh. He'd been going into the wording of the proposed property act and realized it contained certain ambiguities. He then reviewed the position of all his clients who might become victims of these ambiguities if they were to die without making a will. And Miss Dawson was one of them.
So he went down to Warner.
Exactly. And unfortunately timed his arrival just after Dr. Carr told her she must have an operation.
And after Carr had been talking about making wills.
Yes. And of course the old girl blew up in Provin's face saying there was a conspiracy to frighten her into dying.
Yes.
And from that day to this he's had no contact with any member of the family whatsoever.
Oh, well, well. You know, I wonder if that wasn't it.
What do you mean?
That old Miss Dawson thought people were trying to frighten her into dying. Mightn't that have been the cause of death? Fear?
Oh, Charles.
No, I'm quite serious, Peter. That old lady may have died because everybody who came to call kept on talking of her dying.
Yes, but how about Bertha Gotobed? You can't tell me she died of fright.
Well, it was a strain of some sort on a weak heart, see what I mean? You know, all I'm saying is we're tending to think of these cases as murder cases without the slightest shred of real evidence. Now, look, I want evidence, Peter.
I know, I know.
For instance, how about this fortnight at the cottage? Have you had anything through about that?
Well, I had a letter from Miss Clemson this morning.
Ah, and?
Nothing.
I see.
Mary Whittaker was at the cottage with a whole fortnight in the company of Vera Featherston. Neither made any trip to London.
And it was during that fortnight that Bertha died.
Yes.
So, another theory goes west.
I'm afraid it does.
Oh, excuse me, Peter. Parker? Oh, yes, good morning. Yes, he is. Just hold on. It's for you, Mr. Merbles.
Really? Wonder what's up. Hello, Merbles? No, not at all. Evelyn Cropper? Oh, Evelyn Cropper, Bertha's sister. I thought she was from Canada. Oh, I see. I see. That sounds interesting. Did she, by Jove? Mary Whittaker, you mean? That is interesting. Look, I think I should have a chat with Mrs. Cropper. Good. All right, Merbles. Say I'll be round to Mrs. Gulliver's to have a word with her. Goodbye. Oh, Charles, that was most interesting.
That I gathered.
Evelyn Cropper's come over from Canada to see her mother.
Mm.
And she's been telling Merbles of a pretty little scheme to get Miss Dawson to sign a will. A scheme that failed.
Whose scheme?
Mary Whittaker's. And involving the Gotobed girls as potential witnesses.
What?
Oh, quite innocent witnesses. Sounds a pretty devilish piece of deception altogether. I can see why she wanted those girls out of the house. Charles, I wonder if she knew where they'd moved to in London.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, look, the fact that at the time of Bertha's death, Mary was down in Kent, rules out direct involvement.
It's an accomplice.
Exactly.
You don't mean the striking Mrs. Forrest, by any chance?
Why not?
Well, we haven't the slightest proof they know each other, Peter, that's why.
No, but I think we ought to try and find out.
Come in.
Sorry to worry you, sir, but I think you should see this. I've just been going through it.
What's that, Harvey?
Lady's missing person circulation. There, sir. Under Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Good Lord.
What is it?
It's something we get from the county forces when anyone goes missing. There's an entry here for Hampshire, timed at 6 p.m. yesterday. Miss V. Featherstone and Miss M. Whittaker of Leehampton failed to return home from day trip to coast, Wednesday 11th of May.
No.
Lieutenant Colonel R. Featherstone informed Leehampton station officer by telephone 10 a.m. Thursday 12th of May.
Yesterday?
Yes.
And today is Friday the 13th.
Harvey, get Leehampton on the line, quick as you can.
Right, sir.
Why did the man wait so long before reporting the girl missing?
I don't know. Maybe he didn't realize she was missing.
He's her father, I suppose.
That sounds like it.
But does it say anything else?
Description of the girls, home addresses. Ah, parties left Leehampton approximately at 9.30 a.m. Wednesday 11th of May in Austin 7 Tourer, blue, registration number XX9917. Registered owner, M. Whittaker, The Grove, Wellington Avenue, Leehampton. Destination assumed Crow's Beach.
Crow's Beach.
Crow's Beach police investigating. No report missing parties or vehicle up to time of origin.
6 o'clock last night?
Yes.
Leehampton superintendent's on the line now, sir.
Oh, grand.
It's a Mr. Johnson, sir.
Thanks. Superintendent Johnson? Ah, good morning, sir. This is Detective Inspector Parker speaking. Sorry to trouble you. But I've just seen the circulation on your two missing persons. Yes, that's right. Look, we may possibly have an interest in these two ladies. Can you give me your latest on them? You have? Ah, what was... What? I see. And what was used, would you say?
Yes, I see. And how about the other lady? No. No. Look, would you mind if I came down with a colleague? This could interest us very much, I'm afraid. Yes, well, it's good of you to look at it that way. I think it would be mutual aid, definitely. Yes, fine. Yes, we'll go straight there and see your man probably by 3:30 or so. Inspector Rogers, I see. Good. Many thanks, sir. Goodbye.
Well?
They found the car, and they found Vera Featherstone. There's no trace of Mary Whittaker.
And?
The Featherstone girl is dead.
God.
It was a very powerful blow. There was a big spanner nearby.
I see. Where was this, Charles?
Under some gorse bushes, about 10 miles along the coast from Crow's Beach. A place called Shelley's Head.
How are you doing, Barton?
All right, sir. Nearly through now.
There's just this one. There.
Good.
Got everything, have you?
Well, I think so, sir. General views of the location and close-ups of the body, the spanner, and these footprints. Looks like two men and a woman.
Looks like it, yes. How about the Austin?
Oh, I've given you the lot on that, sir.
Any ideas about the other car?
Well, it's left a very clear set of tire marks. Must be a bigger car altogether from the width of tread and the depth it sunk.
Any idea what make?
Continental of some sort. It's a different sort of tire. I'd rather not say till I've looked up the tread pattern.
All right, fine.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes?
We've found something else.
I'll be right with you.
I'll be off then, sir.
Yes, fine, Barton. Let's have a set of those pictures as soon as you can.
Right, sir.
Right, gentlemen. Sorry to hold you up.
Not at all.
Now, what have you found?
This, Inspector. It was in the glove box, tucked inside that lubrication chart.
Fiction magazine. American, is it?
Yes.
The Black Mask.
Yes, and do you see how someone's underlined the first two words?
Yes, the black. Do you think it means anything?
It might be a sort of message.
Well, what do you make of it all?
Well, it looks straightforward. Murder and abduction.
Yes, the two girls are picnicking, two men arrive by car, a struggle. One girl killed by a blow from a spanner and the other one taken off heaven knows where by heaven knows whom.
Yes. The only thing we've got is that cap with the label of a firm in Stepney. It's not much to go on.
No. Not a single fingerprint.
Well, how about the dead girl's parents? Any help?
Well, they could tell us whether Miss Whittaker called for their daughter at 9:30 in the morning the day before yesterday. The girls were just going off for the day. When they didn't come back in the evening, the Featherstones thought they'd probably just left it rather late before starting back and had decided to put up at an hotel for the night. They were expecting a phone call from her.
I see.
When they hadn't heard anything by the next morning, Colonel Featherstone went round to Miss Whittaker's and found the maids there knew nothing either. So then he got on to us.
Inspector, you say the police doctors have no doubt about the cause of death?
Not at all. Why do you ask?
I'd expected a bit more blood about someone after blowing the head as heavy as that.
Oh, I see.
And there are some marks around the nose and lips that look almost like chloroform burns.
Really? Well, I expect the doctor will be able to tell us a bit more when the body's back in the mortuary.
Yes, of course. Well, you know, I think we've seen all there is to see here, Mr. Rogers, and I don't want to hold things up at all. Should we get back to Leehampton?
Good idea. There might be some news of Miss Whittaker. Here, you go on, and I'll join you at the station as soon as I can.
Grant. Right, Peter, let's be off, shall we?
This is horrible, the whole thing.
Yes, it is horrible. Look, take a tip. Don't think of the girl. Just think of getting who did it.
Yes. All right. I'll tell you what. I'll drop you at the Leehampton police station and then pay a call on Miss Clemson.
Oh, yes, I was forgetting her.
She's pretty sure to know the girls are missing, but she won't have heard about Vera yet. Anyway, it'll be worth seeing if she knows something we don't.
Yes?
Mrs. Budge?
Yes?
Oh, good evening. I'm a friend of Miss Clemson's.
Oh, yes. How do you do? It's Mr. Templeton, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, yes, Mr. Templeton. She left you a letter.
A letter?
That's right. Now, it's just here somewhere. There we are.
Thanks.
Yes, she said you might be calling. She'd have to go up to London, you see.
Really?
Yes, poor dear. It's her brother. They think it's pneumonia.
Her brother? Oh, dear. Well, perhaps I'll...
Yes, she said she'd tell you about it all in there. Such a shame, because she was so looking forward to seeing you again, she told me. But, of course, she was very worried about her brother, and I don't blame her. I know when my
good
sister...
Good God.
Was... Yeah, well, what?
This is dreadful.
Yeah, well, I know she was worried about him.
Mrs. Budge, I must go. Do excuse me.
Won't you stay there?
I'm afraid I can't, Mrs. Budge. It's most kind of you, but I must go.
Oh, dear. Well, what? Tell Miss Limpsey you called, shall I?
Yes, of course. Then I called.
Oh, well, poor Mr. Templeton. He was upset.
Any idea what might be holding him up, Mr. Parker?
Well, it might be his car.
Oh?
We had some trouble getting it started. Airlock or something. And I can't imagine Miss Clemson will have much to tell him. He'll be in for a shock when he does get back here, anyway.
Yes. This Miss Clemson, what's she?
What you or I would call an inquiry agent.
Excuse me. Inspector Rogers? Oh, yes, pardon. Good. Yes, I see. A Renault. All right. Many thanks. Goodbye.
The other car at Shelley's Head?
That's right. Barton's pretty sure the tyres are those Renault use.
You know, that rings a bell somewhere.
Oh? Bells are ringing, all right. Inspector Rogers. Oh, yes, put him through. It's him.
Oh?
Yes, Rogers here, Lord Peter. Yes, of course. Just hold on.
Does he want me?
Yes, sounds a bit edgy.
Wonder what's up. Hello, Peter.
Charles, I'm in a bit of a rush. I'm phoning from Guildford.
Guildford?
Well, just outside, the first place I could find a handy phone. Look, I can't explain everything, but Miss Clemson phoned the flat.
Hmm?
Bunter told her we will hear, so she left me a note.
Yeah?
She's taken the 6:10 to London, and I'm after her in the car. She doesn't know Vera's dead, and I have a feeling she's walking into trouble.
What do you mean?
Vera sent her a letter the day she went to the coast.
Oh?
She got the letter yesterday. Vera wanted her advice. She thought someone was putting pressure on Mary Whittaker.
How do you mean? Blackmail?
I don't know. She came across some things that worried her while the two of them were staying at that cottage. She was looking around the writing desk for a pencil and found Mary's checkbook slipped under the blotter. Mary had just gone to answer the front door.
Yes, well?
Well, the checkbook was open so she could see the stubs. The top stub was made out to cash for £10,000.
Good Lord.
Well, she took a peek at the other stubs. There were 3 cash checks for £10,000 during February and March.
And blackmailers prefer cash?
Yes. Miss Clemson had fixed a lunch with Mary today and was hoping to get some clue to it all then. But, of course, Mary didn't turn up. Then she heard that the girls were missing.
Yes.
But the other thing, Charles...
Yes, but look, talking of mysterious checks, wait till you hear what we've got.
What?
I've just had a call from the yard. Your chum, the Reverend H. Dawson, walked into a bank in Stepney this afternoon with a check for £10,000 made out to bearer, signed by Mary Whittaker, and dated yesterday.
What?
Yes, I thought that would shake you. The bank manager read in a London paper at lunchtime that a Mary Whittaker was one of 2 girls missing. When he saw that check an hour later, he phoned our chaps at Stepney. They've got the Reverend there now.
But, Charles, he couldn't have...
Couldn't he? How about that cap we found near the body? That came from Stepney. And how about those words on the magazine?
What, the black?
Meaning a West Indian.
Good heavens. Charles, that check. How did he get it?
Well, according to him, it came in this morning's post with no covering letter. Address on the envelope typed, postmark WC1. It doesn't ring true to me. Anyway, we're going over the check for fingerprints. If there's no sign of hers on it, it could easily be a forged signature.
Yes. Look, Charles, I simply must get on. I've had a horrible thought about the way these people died, and I'm dreadfully worried about Miss Clemson.
Miss Clemson? What
Charles, at the moment, all Miss Clemson knows is that Mary Whittaker and Vera are missing. She doesn't yet know Vera's dead. She's desperately concerned about the girl and is very bravely trying to find out on her own what's going on. The point is Vera told her something else she found at the cottage.
What?
A delivery note from Fortnum and Mason.
A delivery note?
Addressed to our old friend, Mrs. Forrest.
No.
That's who Miss Clemson thinks is behind all this, and I'm pretty sure she's right. But don't you see, Charles? I simply got to get to Mrs. Forrest's before Miss Clemson...
Yes, but Peter, if that note... Peter? Oh, blast.
Has he hung up?
Yes. Good Lord, Rogers. Those tyre marks.
What, the Renault?
Yes. Mrs. Forrest runs a Renault.
And who's Mrs. Forrest?
Oh, no. Shall I answer?
Please.
Inspector Rogers' office?
May I speak to Inspector Parker, if he's there, please?
Parker speaking. Who's that?
Sergeant Harvey from the yard, sir.
Oh, yes, Harvey?
It's about that check, sir.
Yes?
We put it through for fingerprints, and we've got prints of 4 different people.
Yeah.
Dawson, who brought it in, the cashier, the manager, and a 4th person. Mm. Nothing on the records for any of them.
I see. So that's that.
Not quite, sir. It's that 4th person. There's a right-hand thumbprint on the check. Very clear impression.
What about it?
Well, it matches something we've got in the office.
What?
Yes, sir. A thumbprint on that photograph Lord Peter gave us. We have it filed under the name of Forrest at an address in South Audley Street.
Good evening, madam.
Good evening, Porter.
Turned a bit chilly?
Yes.
Do you know your way, madam?
Mrs. Forrest, I want. I think she's flat number 3.
That's right, madam. Second floor. The lift's just here.
Oh, thank you.
Just press the button marked second, madam, and when you get out, flat 3's on your right.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yes?
Oh, good evening. I wonder if I might trouble you for a few moments. It's about our mission settlement. I'd very much like to tell you something about the work we do. The settlement in the East End, and we're most anxious to get as much support as possible.
Come in.
And, oh, may I? That's really most kind of you. Through here?
Yes,
we have such a dedicated band of helpers, and they do such a very worthwhile job. But, of course, as you may imagine, the question of funds is always in a... Yes, it's always a matter of making ends meet, you see. So what we're hoping to do is to add to our circle of subscribers. Now, I wonder if you might perhaps be willing to...
Yes? Willing to do what? To do what, Miss Clemson?
It's you.
Yes, Miss Clemson, it's me.
Keep away. For what's that thing you've got? Hypodermic?
That's right.
Keep it away from me.
Oh, you needn't worry. There's nothing in it.
Keep away. Keep away. No.
Yes, Miss Clemson. Yes. You needn't worry, my dear Miss Clemson. There's nothing in it.
What the hell?
Stay right where you are, if you please.
That's she. That's a woman.
What the hell are you doing here?
Stay right where you are.
What's the meaning of this? Who are you? You're not the porter.
No, madam, and you're not Mrs. Forrest.
What?
I'm a police officer, madam. Sergeant Harvey, Scotland Yard.
No.
Constable.
Sergeant.
See the lady, will you?
Yes, Sergeant.
Right. Mary Whittaker, alias Forrest, I arrest you on the charge of...
Yes?
Of attempted murder, for a start.
Is that all?
No, Miss Whittaker, very probably not. And I must warn you that anything you say may be taken down and used in evidence at your trial.
Trial? Oh, look, this is quite outrageous. Your whole attitude. This woman forced her way into my flat and attacked me.
And how is it that she's now lying on the floor unconscious?
It was self-defense. I struggled with her and she fell against the table.
Indeed, Miss Whittaker. Now, would you mind passing me that hypodermic, please?
This?
Yes, please.
Oh, very well.
Thank you.
I don't know why you're bothering about that. It's what I use for my neuralgia injections.
Really?
Yes. It's completely harmless. There's nothing in it.
But, of course, that's just how you like it, Miss Whittaker.
What the devil do you mean?
I wouldn't exactly call that hypodermic harmless. It doesn't need anything in it, the way you use it. Now, are you really sure you're all right, Miss Clemson? Oh,
perfectly.
Sure?
Perfectly, thank you, Mr. Parker.
Here we are, my lord.
Ah, Bunter, splendid. Miss Clemson will be most grateful.
You care to try this, madam?
Oh, thank you. What is it?
It's Bunter's patent pick-me-up, Miss Clemson. Do you the world of good. I strongly recommend it.
Really? But mightn't I get intoxicated?
You might. But after what you've been through, why not?
Well, all right. Oh, I say it. It's good.
There. What did I tell you?
Oh, it's really good, Bunter. Thank you very much.
Not at all, madam. Thank you.
Well, there we are, Charles. The end of the case. Oh. And nearly the end of you, Miss Clemson. What a day it's been.
Oh, that woman's face, Lord Peter. I just can't believe I'm alive.
I can imagine.
But I still don't understand about the hypodermic. There wasn't any poison in it or anything.
I know there wasn't. That was the whole idea.
But how did you get onto it?
Mrs. Myrtle.
Your car?
Yes. Remember this morning when I got to your office late? She had an airlock in her petrol feed?
Of course. And we had the same trouble this afternoon.
Exactly. The whole thing came to me suddenly on the way back to town. When I got to Hyde Park, I found a call box and rang Dr. Carr to see what he thought. He could, as they say, have
have kicked himself.
But you mean the hypodermic was only injecting air?
Nothing but air. Look, the heart pushes blood round the body, right? It acts as a pump.
Yes.
Like the petrol pump in a car. Introduce a blockage into the bloodstream, and the heart stops pumping.
I see.
You see? The hypodermic is filled with air. This is injected into the bloodstream. The air bubble causes a blockage, and the result? Just another case of heart failure. No special symptoms. Nothing. Only one thing.
What?
Somewhere, the tiny mark of the needle. If you happen to be looking for it.
Yeah.
What a wicked mind to think of a thing like that.
Wicked and knowledgeable. She's a fully qualified nurse, don't forget.
Yes.
And of course, as Carr pointed out, the one thing a nurse has to do when giving an injection, a normal injection, is to be completely positive there's no air trapped in the hypodermic.
Yes, of course. But Mr. Parker, Well, now, that sergeant I thought was the porter. How did he come to be there in time?
Because I sent him. He phoned me at Leehampton with some information that proved Mrs. Forrest and Mary Whittaker were one and the same person.
Ah, that woman had us fooled. I suppose all that bleached hair was a wig.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it was.
And that makeup.
I know.
Well, as soon as I knew about Mrs. Forrest, I knew you were definitely walking into trouble, Miss Clemson. I got Harvey to go straight round to the flats and contact the real porter. As luck would have it, the chap had spare keys to all the flats in case of fire.
Ah.
So Harvey borrowed the key to the flat, and while he was about it, the porter's uniform.
It wasn't too bad a fit, huh?
It wasn't. You see, we thought it could well be best to let you go on up to the flat when you got there, Miss Clemson, but with Harvey to keep an eye on you, just thinking he was the porter wouldn't worry you.
I see what you mean.
Well, then he went through to the entrance hall and waited for developments. You arrived first, and you just after, I gather, Peter.
Just as Miss Clemson's taxi was pulling away, about 30 seconds behind.
Good heavens!
The moment you got into the lift, the sergeant and I made a dash for the stairs. We got up to the second floor just as you were doing your stuff about the mission settlement. Then she let you in. And when we heard the sitting room door close, we used a spare key to let ourselves in, too.
That's amazing. But you know, what I don't understand, Lord Peter, is why. Why did she do all those terrible things?
Why? God knows. Greed, I suppose.
Oh, yes.
In fairness to her, Miss Dawson did want her to have her money when she died. The catch was the old girl wouldn't commit herself in writing. Then when the Reverend Hallelujah turned up and the new property act began to be discussed, she realized her position might be very precarious. Mm. But when you think of it, there are only two things she could do. Either trick Miss Dawson into making a will, or see that she died before the new act came into force.
Yes, yes.
Well, we heard today that in fact she tried a spot of trickery, but Miss Dawson caught her out. So that was that. She got the go-to-bed girls innocently standing by to witness the signing, instead of which they witnessed a row. And their knowledge of that row made them potentially dangerous.
Yes.
Well, she dismissed them. And must have made a point of knowing where they had gone to in London.
Mm-hmm.
But as regards her aunt, she was left with the simple alternative of seeing she died before the 1st of January 1926. And she did so with her little hypodermic.
Oh, horrible. But, Lord Peter, now, about poor Bertha Gotobed. Now, if Mary Whittaker was down at the cottage at the time she died, how can Mary have murdered her?
Because at that time she wasn't at the cottage. What? She'd spotted by advertisement for the Gotobeds and had gone up to London.
But Vera said she never left the cottage.
Vera lied.
I can't believe it.
You have to believe it. Because when we interviewed Mrs. Forrest, she admitted being in London at the time in question. And as we now know, Mrs. Forrest is, in fact, Mary Whittaker.
Yes, yes, of course.
So Vera was lying. Oh. But only out of loyalty. Because Mary asked her to say she'd never left the cottage. Though she couldn't have realized why she asked her that. She thought the trip to London was simply to pay off a blackmailer. She didn't know it was to murder Bertha. She sent you that letter because she liked you, trusted you, and simply had to tell you about those checks. But it's my guess she'd never have told you of Mary's trip to London.
I think you're right. But those checks, where was the money going?
To Mrs. Forrest, I'd say.
Yes.
Mrs. Forrest?
The double identity. At any time, if things got difficult, Miss Whittaker could disappear and Mrs. Forrest carry on. But to do so, Mrs. Forrest had to have money.
Of course.
And a bank account. So, Mary Whittaker draws cash in Leehampton, and Mrs. Forrest pays it into her bank in South Audley Street.
Simple, isn't it?
Yes, her big mistake was that £5 note, the one in Bertha's handbag. Without that, we'd have known nothing of Mrs. Forrest at all.
That little visit we paid her must have got her rattled. I think that was when she decided to stage her disappearance.
As Mary Whittaker?
Yes. They really should have done better the other way round.
But why murder poor little Vera?
Simply to make things look convincing. One young woman bashed on the head with a spanner. The other spirited away by a couple of toughs.
But Vera would have done anything for her.
I know. But as far as Mary was concerned, Vera was expendable. I think that's her whole attitude to humanity. She probably did it after they had their picnic. Vera's most likely having a snooze. Mary won't risk killing her with a spanner. She's hardly experienced in that direction. So she puts up properly asleep with a little chloroform, does her usual neat job with the hypodermic, and then as soon as the girl is dead, lays on some blows with the spanner. And because Vera's blood's already stopped flowing, the spanner doesn't cause much of a mess.
Yes, of course.
Well, then, Mary nips through the gorse to the Renault, which she's driven down from London the day before. In it, she's got that magazine, the Black Mask. Two pairs of men's shoes to make footprints, and the captain's
and off she goes to London in the Renault.
Exactly. This all happens the day before yesterday. Yesterday, she takes a short trip to a pillar box in WC1 and posts a bearer check for £10,000 to the Reverend Hallelujah Dawson, who lives, or purely by chance, in Stepney.
Yes, he gets the check this morning, goes round to a bank this afternoon, and is held by Stepney police on suspicion of murdering Vera Featherstone and abducting Mary Whittaker for the purposes of illegal gain.
What a mind that woman must have. It's frightening.
It is. I'd hate to play chess with her. Old Hallelujah must have been thrilled by that check, though, Charles. He must have thought she'd had a change of heart. He'll be dreadfully disappointed not to get that money.
Who said he won't get it?
Charles, you old devil.
It's a perfectly good check for £10,000, signed by Mary Whittaker. No reason why it shouldn't be cleared in the ordinary course of business.
Charles, I take my hat off to you.
Thank you, my lord. Most kind of you. But, you know, there's just one thing about all this that worries me. I wonder if you've thought about it.
What's that?
Proof.
Proof?
Evidence. Look, I agree with everything you've said. I'm confident that that woman has committed 3 murders and attempted a 4th tonight. And at this moment, she's in the cells at Savile Row charged with that attempt. But with a good defense, there's a strong chance she may get off.
Oh, surely not.
Well, she may stick to her story that Miss Clemson attacked her.
But that's nonsense.
Yes, I know. Of course it's nonsense. We all know that. But can we convince a jury it's nonsense? That's our job now. That and getting enough real evidence over the other deaths. Well, we've a certain amount, but I'm not at all sure it's enough. We need enough for a conviction.
I wonder who this is. 11:12. Hello? Yes, that's right. Well, certainly. He's just here. It's for you, Charles. Savile Row Police Station.
Oh, right. Parker here. Oh, yes. What is it, Sergeant?
What? But wasn't there any...
I see. Right, there's nothing you can do. I'll be straight over.
We're too late, are we?
I'm afraid we are. Suicide.
No.
In her cell. She tied a sheet to the window bars and strangled herself.
May God rest her soul.
Yes. So, you don't get your conviction, Charles?
No, I don't get a conviction.
But you do get proof.
You could call it that, Peter.
I think so, yes. I think you could call it proof.
Unnatural Death, the novel by Dorothy L. Sayers, was dramatized for radio by David Geary. The part of Lord Peter Wimsey was played by Hugh Burton, and Detective Inspector Charles Parker by Clifford Norgate. Bunter, William Edel. Miss Clemson, Catherine Parr. Mrs. Forrest, Eva Haddon. Mrs. Budge, Kathleen Helm. Nurse Fillimore, Kate Binchy. Sergeant Harvey, John Rowe. Merbles, Louis Stringer. Vera Featherstone, Jilly Gratham. Inspector Rogers, Edward Kelsey. P.C. Barton, Graham Allam, and Dr. Carr, John Sampson. The play was produced by David H. Godfrey.